This is Audible.
Recorded books and one-click digital present Rebel of the Sands by Alwyn Hamilton. Narrated by Sunila Nankani. Chapter 1. They said the only folks who belonged in Deadshot after dark were the ones who were up to no good. I wasn't up to no good. Then again, I wasn't exactly up to no bad, neither. I slid from Blue's saddle and tethered her to a post behind some bar called the Dusty Mouth. The kid sitting against the fence was sizing me up suspiciously. Or maybe that was just his two black eyes. I tugged the wide brim of my hat lower as I stepped out of the yard. I'd stolen the hat from my uncle, along with the horse. Well, borrowed, more like. Everything I owned belonged to my uncle anyway, according to law, down to the clothes on my back. The doors of the bar banged open, spilling out light and noise and a fat drunk with his arm around a pretty girl. My hand snapped to my shima before I could think better of it, checking it was still tightly fastened so the better part of my face was covered. I was wrapped up to my eyes, and even hours after sunset I was sweating under the padding like a sinner at prayers. I figured I looked more like some lost nomad than a real sharpshooter. But so long as I didn't look like a girl, it didn't much matter. Tonight, I was getting out of here with at least my life. All the better if I got out with a few coins in my pocket, too. It wasn't hard to spot the pistol pit on the other side of Deadshot. It was the noisiest building in town, and that wasn't saying nothing. A great big gutted-out barn at the end of the dusty street. It was swarming with bodies and blazing with light, propped up against a half-collapsed prayer house with a boarded-up door. Might be that once upon a time the barn had served some honest horse trader, but that was years ago by the looks of things. The crowd thickened the closer I got, like buzzards swarming to a fresh carcass. A man with a bloody nose was pinned up against a wall by two others, while another drove his fist into the man's face over and over. A girl called out from a window with words that'd make an iron dragger blush. A group of factory workers, still in their uniforms, huddled around a nomad in a busted-up wagon who was shouting about selling genie blood that'd grant good folks their heart's desires. His wide grin looked desperate in the oily lamplight, and no wonder. It had been years since anyone around these parts had seen a real, live first being, let alone a genie. Besides, he should have known better than to think desert dwellers would believe Jean bled anything other than pure fire, or that anyone in Deadshot would believe themselves good folk. Everybody in the last county went to prayers enough to know better on both counts. I tried to keep my eyes forward, like I'd seen it all before. If I climbed past the buildings, I'd be able to look across the sand and scrub all the way home to Dustwalk, though there'd be nothing but dark houses. Dustwalk got up and went down with the sun. Good, honest behavior didn't belong to the dark hours of the night. If it were possible to die of boredom, everyone in Dustwalk would be corpses in the sand. But Deadshot was alive and kicking. No one paid me much mind as I slid into the barn. A big crowd was already gathered in the pistol pit. Lines of huge oil lamps hung from the eaves, giving the gawkers' faces a greasy glow. Scrawny kids were setting up targets and dodging a big man's blows as he shouted at them to move faster. Orphans, by the looks of them. Likely kids whose fathers had worked in the hulking weapons factory on the outskirts of Dustwalk until they'd gotten blown to bits by faulty machinery. Or until the day they'd gone to work drunk and burned themselves too badly to live. Gunpowder wasn't hardly safe work. I was so busy staring that I nearly walked straight into the giant of a man at the door.
"Front or back?"
he demanded, his hands resting carelessly on a scimitar on his left hip and a gun on his right.
What?
I remember just in time to pitch my voice lower. I'd been practicing imitating my friend Tamid all week, but I still sounded like a boy instead of a man. The hired muscle at the door didn't seem to care.
It's 3 fuza to stand at the back, 5 to stand at the front. Betting starts at 10.
How much to stand in the middle? Damn, I hadn't meant to say that. Aunt Farah had been trying to smack the smart mouth off me for a year now with no luck. I got the feeling it would hurt more if this man tried. But he just frowned like he thought I might be simple.
Front or back? There's no middle, boy.
I'm not here to watch, I said, before I could lose the last of my nerve. I'm here to shoot.
What are you doing wasting my time, then? You want Hassan.
He shoved me toward a heavy-set man with billowing bright red trousers and a dark beard slicked to his chin, standing behind a low table piled with coins that bounced as he drummed his fingers. I took a deep breath through my shima and tried to look like my stomach wasn't trying to escape through my mouth.
How much to enter?
The scar on Hassan's lip made it look like it curled up in a sneer.
50 fuza.
50? That was almost everything I had. Everything I'd been saving up in the last year to escape to Isman, the capital of Miraji. Even with my face covered from the nose down, Hassan must have seen the hesitation. His attention was already wandering past me, like he figured I was about to walk away. That was what did it. I dropped the money on the table in a jangling handful of luzi and half-luzi that I'd scrimped one by one over the past 3 years. Aunt Farah always said I didn't seem to mind proving myself dumb if it meant proving someone else wrong. So maybe Aunt Farah was right. Hassan eyed the coins skeptically, but when he counted them with the speed of a professional money grubber, he couldn't deny it was all there. For a brief moment, the satisfaction tamped down on my nerves. He shoved a piece of wood at me that dangled from a loop of string like a pendant. The number 27 was painted in black on it.
Had much practice with a gun, 27?
Hassan asked as I put the string over my head. The tag bounced off the wraps I had forced over my chest to flatten it.
Some,
I hedged. We were wanting for almost everything in Dustwalk, in the whole last county for that matter. Food, water, clothes. There were only 2 things we had too much of, sand and guns. Hassan snorted.
Then you ought to know to keep your hands from shaking.
I pressed my hands close to my body to still them as I walked into the pit. If I couldn't hold a gun steady, it wouldn't much matter that I learned to aim before I learned to read. I lined up in the sand next to a man who looked like he was mostly bones under his grubby factory uniform. Another man came to stand on my other side, with a 28 around his thick neck. All around us, the stands filled. The bet wranglers shouted out odds and numbers. If I were betting, I'd wager I didn't have any odds. No one in their right mind would put money on some skinny boy without the guts to even lower his shima and show his face. Maybe I could win some crazy drunk a poor man's fortune by proving the right-minded ones wrong.
Good evening, gents.
Hassan's voice carried over the crowd, quieting them down. Dozens of kids ran among us, handing out the pistols. A girl with braids and bare feet passed me mine. The weight was instantly comforting in my palm. I quickly flicked open the chamber. There were 6 bullets neatly lined up.
Everyone knows the rules. So you'd better play by them, or God help me, I'll break your cheating faces myself.
A laugh erupted from the stands, and a few whoops. Bottles were being passed around already, and men were pointing at us in that way I knew from watching my uncle trade horses.
Round one. You've got 6 bullets, 6 bottles. If you've got any bottles left at the end, you're out. First 10, line up.
The rest of us stayed still as numbers 1 to 10 shuffled into place, their toes on a painted white line in the dirt. I judged it about 12 feet between them and the bottles. A kid could make that. 2 men still managed to miss with their very first bullets. In the end, only half the men hit all their marks. One of them was twice the size of any other competitor. He was wearing what might once have been an army uniform, though it was too worn to tell for sure whether it used to be gleaming army gold or if it was just dirty with desert dust. He wore the number 1 painted in a bold slash across the piece of wood on his chest. He got the biggest cheer of all. There were cries of, "Damad! Damad! Champion!" as he turned away, grabbing one of the kids scurrying around to collect broken glass. Damad spoke too low for me to hear, then shoved the child off. The kid came back with a bottle of brown liquor. Damad started chugging, lounging against the bars that separated the pit from the stands. He wouldn't stay a champion long if he was going to wind up sloshed. The next round was even more dismal. Just 1 of the shooters hit all his targets. As the losers shuffled off, I got a clear view of the winner's face. He wasn't from around here, no doubt about it. That was the first thing I noticed. Everybody around here was from around here. Nobody in their right mind would choose to be in the last county otherwise. He was young, maybe a few years older than I was, and dressed like one of us, wearing a green shima carelessly around his neck and desert clothes loose enough that it was hard to tell if he was really as broad as he seemed. His hair was as black as any Marajin boy's. Even his skin was dark enough that he might have passed for one of us. But he just wasn't. He had strange, sharp features I'd never seen before, with high-angled cheekbones, a straight, square jaw, and eyebrows that made dark slashes above the uncanniest eyes I'd ever seen. He wasn't bad-looking either, at that. A few of the men he'd beat spat at his feet. The young foreigner's mouth pulled up in one corner like he was trying to keep from laughing. Then, as if sensing my eyes on him, he glanced at me. I looked away fast. There were 11 of us left, and we were jostling for space along the line with the extra body, even with me being half the size of every man here.
"Move, 27.
An elbow jammed into my side. My head shot up with a retort on my tongue. The retort died there as I recognized Fazim al-Motem sidling up next to me. I fought the urge to curse. Fazim had taught me every curse word I knew, back when he was 8 and I was 6. When we were caught using them, I got my mouth scrubbed out with sand, and he blamed it all on me. Dustwalk was a small town. I'd known Fazim my whole life. Hated him since I grew into some sense. These days, he spent most of his time in my uncle's house, where I was stuck living, too, trying to get his hands under my cousin Shira's clothes. Every so often, he'd make a grab at a piece of me, too, when Shira wasn't looking. What the hell was he doing here? Actually, with a gun in his hand, I could sort of figure. Damn him. It was one thing if I got myself spotted as a girl. It was a whole other thing if Fazim recognized me. I'd been in trouble plenty since I was caught cursing, but I'd only been beaten within an inch of my life once. It had been right after my mother died, when I'd tried to borrow one of my uncle's horses all the way out of Dustwalk. I made it halfway to Juniper City before they caught me. I couldn't sit on a horse for a month, when Aunt Farah and her switch were done with me. If Aunt Farah found out I was in Deadshot gambling stolen money, she'd beat me until that inch felt like it had been a mile. The smart thing would be to turn around and get out of here. Except that would mean I would be 50 fuza poorer, and money was in shorter supply than smarts. I realized I was standing like a girl and straightened up before facing the targets. The kids were still racing around, lining up the bottles. Fazim tracked their movements with the barrel of his gun, calling out, "Bang, bang, bang," and laughing as they flinched. I wished his gun would backfire on him and shoot that smile off his face. The kids cleared out fast, and it was just us shooters and our bottles. We were the last group before the end of the first round. Guns were already going off all around me. I focused on my 6 bottles straight ahead. I can make a shot like this blindfolded, but I was being careful. I checked my distance, lined up the barrel, checked my sight. When I was satisfied, I pulled the trigger. The bottle farthest to the right exploded, and my shoulders eased a little. The next 3 bottles went down in quick succession. My finger pressed down on the trigger for the 5th time. A shout punctured my focus. I had no other warning before a body rammed into me. My shot went wide. Fazim had been shoved sideways by another shooter, ramming into me on his way to the ground, another one of the shooters on top of him. A boo went up from the crowd as Fazim scuffled in the sand with the other man. The big man from the door was already breaking up the fight. Fazim was dragged to the side by the scruff of his neck. Hassan watched them go, looking bored, then turned back to the crowd. "Winners from this round." "Hey!" I shouted without thinking. "I want another bullet." A laugh went up around me. So much for not drawing attention to myself. My neck was burning with all the eyes on me, but this was too important not to ask. Scorn was written all over Hassan's face, and I felt the mix of humiliation and anger rise up in my throat in an answer.
"That's not how it works, 27. 6 bullets, 6 bottles. No second chances."
"But that's not fair. He pushed me." I gestured at Fazim, who was nursing his jaw up against the wall.
"And this isn't a schoolyard, little boy. We don't need to be fair. Now you can use your last bullet and lose, or get out of line and forfeit."
I was the only one with any bullets left. The crowd started jeering at me to get out of the way, and an angry flush rose in my hidden face. Standing alone on the line, I raised my gun. I could feel the weight of the single bullet in the chamber. I let out one long breath that moved my shima from where it was sticking to my lips. 1 bullet. 2 bottles. I took 2 steps to my right, and then half a step back. I twisted my body and tried to see it all in my mind. Dead center, and I'd never hit the second one. Clip it too far off, and neither would break. 50 fuza. I shut out the shouting and taunts around me. I ignored the fact that every eye in here was on me, and that I'd blown all chances of being inconspicuous. Fear crept in its place. The same fear that had crouched in my stomach for the past 3 days. Since the night I'd been crawling around my uncle's house after dark on my way to Tamid's and overheard Aunt Farah say my name. "Amani?" I hadn't caught whatever had come before my name, but it was enough to make me stop.
"She's needing of a husband."
My uncle Asid's voice carried more than his first wife's.
"A man could finally beat some sense into her. In less than a month, Zahia will have been dead a year, and Amani will be clean and allowed to wed."
Since my mother was hanged, folks had slowly stopped saying her name like a curse. Now my uncle mentioned her death more like a matter of business. It's hard enough to find a husband for your daughters. Aunt Farah sounded irritated. Now you want me to find one for my sister's brat, too? Aunt Farah never said my mother's name, not since she'd been hanged.
I'll take her as a wife, then.
Uncle Asid said it like he was talking about a trading horse. My arms nearly buckled into the sand. Aunt Farah made a disdainful hissing noise at the back of her throat. She's too young. There was an impatient tone in her voice that normally ended a conversation.
No younger than Nita was. She is living in my house anyway, eating my food.
Aunt Farah normally ruled the house as first wife, but every so often her husband would root his feet, and just now Uncle Asid was warming to this idea unnervingly fast.
She can either stay here as my wife or leave as someone else's. I choose her to stay.
I didn't choose to stay. I chose to get out or die trying. And just like that, everything came into focus. Me and my target. Nothing mattered but the aim. I pulled the trigger. The first bottle broke instantly. The second teetered for a moment on the edge of the wooden bar. I could see the chip in the thick glass where I'd hit it. I held my breath as the bottle rocked back and forth. 50 fuza I might never see again. 50 fuza to lose, and my only way out. The bottle hit the ground and shattered. The crowd roared. I let out a long breath. When I turned around, Hassan was looking like I was a snake who dodged a snare. Behind him, the foreigner was watching me, eyebrows up. I couldn't stop grinning behind my shima.
How'd I do?
Hassan's lip curled.
Line up for round two.
Chapter 2. I didn't know how long we'd been shooting. Long enough for sweat to start pooling in the small of my back. Long enough for Damad the champion to slosh down 3 whole bottles of booze between rounds. And long enough for one man after another to get knocked out of the game. But I still had a gun. The target faced me at the end of the room. Bottles moving on a slow, rotating board some kid was turning with a crank. I slammed my finger down 6 times. I didn't hear the glass shatter over the roar of the crowd. A hand dropped onto my shoulder.
Your final competitors tonight, Hassan shouted near my ear. Our own champion, Damad.
The man stumbled from the drink and raised his arms high.
Our returning challenger, the Eastern Snake.
The foreigner barely acknowledged the taunts and hoots. His mouth just pulled up at one side, and he didn't look up.
And a newcomer on this fine evening.
He yanked my arm up hard, and the crowd went wild, hollering and stomping their feet until the barn shook.
The Blue-Eyed Bandit.
The nickname killed my excitement in one panicked jolt. I searched the pistol pit for Fazim. No matter if I could pass for a boy, my eyes weren't something I could hide. Everything else about me was as dark as any desert girl was supposed to be, but my pale eyes made me stick out. Stupid as he was, if Fazim was still here, he might just be smart enough to put 2 and 2 together and not come out with 3. But I grinned behind my shima all the same and let the cheers wash over me. Hassan dropped my arm.
10 minutes to get your last bets in, folks. Our final round is coming up.
There was a rush for the bet wranglers. With nothing else to do, I sank down in the sand in an empty corner of the pit, leaning against the railings. My legs still felt a little unsteady from leftover nerves. My shirt was sticking to my stomach with sweat. My face felt flushed behind the cloth of my shima. But I was winning. I closed my eyes. I might actually leave with the cash pot. I worked it out quick in my head. The prize money came to over 1,000 fuza. I'd have to scrimp till I was dead to steal and save 1,000 fuza, especially with the mines in Sazi collapsing a few weeks back. An accident. Badly placed explosives. That was the official story. It had happened before, though maybe not so bad. Only I'd heard whispers of sabotage, too, that someone had planted a bomb. Or the wilder rumors claimed it was a first being, a genie striking Sazi down for its sins. But no matter what happened, no metal coming down from the mines meant no guns, which meant no money. Everyone was tightening belts lately, and I didn't even have enough to buy a belt. But with 1,000 fuza, I could do a hell of a lot more than that. Get out of this dead-end desert that ran on factory smoke. I could run straight for Isman. All I'd have to do was get to Juniper City on the next caravan. Then there'd be trains from there to Isman. Isman. I couldn't think of the city without hearing it whispered like a hopeful prayer in my mother's voice. A promise of a bigger world, a better life, one that didn't end in a short drop and a sudden stop. So, blue-eyed bandit. I opened my eyes as the foreigner sank down next to me, propping his arms on his knees. He didn't look at me when he spoke.
It's better than Eastern Snake, at least.
He was holding a skin of water. I hadn't realized how thirsty I was until that moment, and my eyes tracked it as he took a long drink.
Still, it has a certain dishonest bent to it.
He glanced at me out of the corner of his eye. There was a skew to his words that would make even the most trusting fool think he was trouble.
You got a real name?
Sure. But you can call me Oman, if you've got to call me something. My eyes might betray me to some, but telling him my name was Amani Al-Hiza would betray a lot more. The foreigner snorted.
Funny. Oman's my name, too.
Funny. I agreed dryly, a smile pulling at my mouth all the same. I reckoned half the men born in Miraji were called Oman, after our exalted sultan. I didn't know if their parents figured it would win them favor with our ruler, not that they'd ever get so much as spitting distance from him, or if they thought God might give them favor by mistake. But I did know that the stranger wasn't named Oman any more than I was. Everything about him was foreign, from his eyes to the angles in his face and the way he wore his desert clothes like they didn't belong against his skin. Even his words were tinged with an accent, though he spoke cleaner Mirajin than most folks around here.
"Where are you from, anyhow?"
I asked before I could stop myself. Every time I opened my mouth, it was another chance to get found out for a girl. But I couldn't help myself. The foreigner took a swig of water.
Nowhere in particular. You?
Nowhere interesting. I could play that game, too.
Thirsty?
He offered me the skin, his attention a little too sharp. I was parched, but I didn't dare lift my shima, not even a little. Besides, this was the desert. You got used to being thirsty.
I'll live,
I said, trying not to run my tongue over my dried lips.
Suit yourself.
He took a long drink. I watched his throat rise and fall greedily.
Our friend certainly seems to be thirsty, that is.
I followed his gaze to Damad. He was draining another bottle, his face red.
So much the better for you, I shrugged. I was going to beat you both anyhow. At least you're bound to come in second now.
The foreigner broke into easy laughter. I felt stupidly pleased with myself for being the one to drag it out of him. One of the men pushing to the front of the bet wranglers looked over at us, frowning, like we might be conspiring.
I like you, kid, the foreigner said. And you're talented, so I'm going to give you some advice. Throw the game.
You really suppose that's going to work on me? I tried for bravado, straightening up as much as I could.
You see our friend over there?
He nodded to Damad.
He plays for the house. Hassan gets rich off Damad's winning. They don't like it when strangers beat him.
And how do you know so much, not being from around these parts? The foreigner leaned over conspiratorially.
Because I beat him last week.
We both watched Damad sway on his feet, grabbing the wall for support.
Doesn't seem all that hard.
It's not. The two men Hassan sent to corner me in an alley and get the money back were more of a challenge, though.
He opened and closed his hand, and I saw healing bruises on his knuckles. He caught me looking.
Don't worry.
He winked at me.
You ought to see the other guys.
I wiped away whatever he'd seen in my face that he thought was worry. And here you are, back to give them a second chance at you. He turned his full attention on me, all joking gone.
How old are you? 13?
16, near 17 as a girl, but as a boy, I looked young.
Someone who can shoot like you. You'll go far in a few more years if you don't get killed tonight. There'd be no shame in quitting. We all know you can shoot. Don't need to die proving it.
I eyed him. Why are you back if it's so dangerous then?
Because I need the money.
He took a swig from the water skin before getting to his feet.
And I always make it out of trouble alive.
I felt a twinge at that. I knew what it was like to be desperate.
He offered me a hand up. I didn't take it.
You can't have more need than I do, I said quietly. And for a moment, I felt like we understood each other. We were on the same side, but we were still against each other. The foreigner dropped his hand.
Suit yourself, bandit.
He walked off. I sat there a moment longer, convincing myself that he was just trying to intimidate me into quitting. I knew we could both beat Damad, but the foreigner was a decent shot.
I was better.
I had to be better. The bet wranglers were fending off the last of their customers as the three of us stepped back up to the line. This time, when the little barefoot girl ran up, she only brought one bullet with her. In her other hand was a strip of black cloth.
Our final round tonight,
Hassan declared.
Blind man's bluff.
I reached for the blindfold, but the sound of gunshots stopped me. I ducked before I realized the sound was coming from outside. Someone screamed. Half our audience were on their feet, craning over one another to get a look outside at this new entertainment. I couldn't see, but I heard the shout clear enough. In the name of the rebel Prince Ahmed, a new dawn, a new desert! Pinpricks raced to every bit of skin I had.
Damn.
The foreigner rubbed his knuckles across his chin.
That wasn't smart.
A new dawn. A new desert. Everybody had heard the rallying cry of the rebel prince, but only in whispers. You'd have to be an idiot to shout your support of the Sultan's rogue son. There were too many men with old ideas and new guns to say a word against the Sultan in the last county. Snatches of voices rose from the babble.
The rebel prince was killed in Seymour weeks ago. I heard he's hiding in the Durva's caves with his demon sister. Should be hanged straight away. He's marching on Isman as we speak.
I had heard half those stories, too, and a half dozen more. Ever since the day of the Sultim trials, when Prince Ahmed reappeared after disappearing 15 years earlier to compete for his father's throne, the stories about him walked the line between news and myth. They said that he'd won the Sultim trials outright, and the Sultan tried to have him killed instead of naming him heir. That he'd cheated using magic and lost all the same. The only part that stayed the same in every version was that after failing to win the throne at the trials, he'd disappeared into the desert to start a rebellion to win the country back. A new dawn, a new desert. A spark of excitement struck inside me. Most stories I knew were about things that happened long ago to people long dead. The rebel prince was a story we were all still living, even if he was likely to get killed any day now. The scuffle outside was short, and then the lug from the door was dragging in a kid by the collar. He was probably as young as I looked in my disguise. Drunken boos went through the crowd as he passed.
Well, well.
Hassan's voice carried over the din as he tried to get the crowd's attention back. The boy stumbled to stay on his feet, blood pouring from his face. He looked like he'd taken some bad hits to the face, but nothing worse. No bullet holes or stab wounds yet.
It looks like we have a volunteer.
The lug dragged the boy forward and shoved him against the target. He put the bottle on top of the kid's head. My heart went down like a stone into my stomach.
We have a new game, then. Traitor's Bluff.
Hassan crowed, his arms wide. The crowd answered in a roar. I could make that shot without hurting the kid. The foreigner could, too. But the champion was swaying on his feet and downing another drink. I wasn't sure he could hit the ground if he tripped, never mind anything else. The kid swayed on his feet, and the bottle clunked dully into the sand. The crowd answered with heckles. He looked like he might cry as Hassan's lug rammed his shoulder back until he stood straight, putting the bottle back on his head.
The kid is too hurt to stand up straight, let alone keep the bottle steady.
I caught the foreigner's words. He was talking to Hassan.
You can't shoot a target that won't stay put. Then don't shoot.
Hassan waved a hand.
If you and the bandit are too cowardly, then you can just walk away. Let my man win.
So that's what Hassan was counting on, that the foreigner and I would go yellow-bellied and let Damad win. Just to keep some kid alive. Just some kid who was younger than I was and already had arms marked with scars from factory work. No, it was him or me. This kid wasn't going to survive long in the desert with rebellion on his tongue anyway. Not when half the last county would rip him to shreds for treason. What would it matter if I took the shot and someone else killed him? Wouldn't make it my fault if he died.
Or shoot him in the head and we'll call it close enough,
Hassan joked. My hand tightened.
I don't care.
Of course he did. He was counting on us walking away. We both knew it. You don't think it will look a little bit suspicious if we both drop out and let your man win? I asked, cutting off whatever the foreigner had been about to say. Hassan spun a bullet between his fingers.
I think that my pockets will be heavy with gold and yours won't. Sure.
I flung over my shoulder without taking my eyes off the pathetic young rebel standing with his back against the target. He didn't deserve to be a victim of the desert any more than I did.
And you'll have more trouble than gold when your customers figure they've been duped.
Hassan's face changed. He hadn't thought of that. I scanned the crowd, trying to look bored, like I didn't need this. Like I wasn't trying to play him, just like he was trying to play us.
You've got a room full of drunks here, who've put up some hard-earned money on this, and times are tight lately, what with no raw metals coming in from Sazi. It's making everyone mighty irritable, I've noticed. Don't you feel it in your bones?
I didn't need to check if Hassan was following my gaze. A blind man could see the mass of broke factory workers and underfed boys and men with already raw knuckles aching for a release. Even the kid with his split lip lined up as a target was one of the restless. Only he was drunk on the prince's rebellion instead of too loosey liquor. Hell, I knew the feeling. I was counting on it to carry me all the way to Isman.
Living under our sun doesn't exactly give men a cool head, especially, say, if an eastern snake and a blue-eyed bandit were to start talking out there.
I looked at Hassan out of the corner of my eye, praying that he wasn't about to have me shot.
I'll tell you what, though. I can help you out.
Can you now?
Hassan scoffed, but he was still listening.
Sure. I'll forfeit and take the kid's place. For 1,000 fuza.
The foreigner rounded on me, saying something in a language I didn't know but that sounded like cursing.
Are you crazy, kid?
He switched back to Mirajin.
You want to get shot instead of him?
If I'm lucky, he'll miss me. I felt my chest rising and falling with each shallow breath. The kid was rocking back and forth on the sand that I was sure was filled with glass. He had bare feet, but he didn't whimper.
Are we shooting or what?
Damad bellowed, chucking his empty bottle at the kid, missing him by a foot. I was still watching Hassan. The sale wasn't made yet.
If I'm not lucky, you don't have to pay me a thing and your crowd gets blood.
Hassan's lip curled up nasty-like.
And everybody goes home happy. Except the dead bandit,
the foreigner said, low enough that I was the only one who heard. He raised his voice.
We'll throw the game.
The foreigner's eyes hadn't left me, though he was talking to Hassan. I opened my mouth to argue, but something in his gaze made me stop. We were on the same side now.
If the blue-eyed bandit here is so determined to get up there as a target, I'll shoot first. I'll miss the bottle without shooting him in the head. Then you let the bandit shoot, with me as the target. He'll miss too.
My shoulders felt tight, like my arms knew I couldn't bear to miss a shot. But he was trusting me, so I nodded ever so slightly.
Your champion wins by default. We all get out of here without a bullet hole in us.
And with the money,
I piped up before the foreigner could make us both honorable and poor.
We'll leave with 1,000 from the house winnings, each.
I'll give you 100 each, Hassan said.
8,
I retorted.
5, and you're grateful I don't send someone after you to break your fingers and bring me my money back.
Done.
500 wasn't 1,000, but it was better than nothing, and I might still be able to get to Isman on that. The crowd was beginning to get rowdy. A cry went up from the stands.
Are you yellow-bellied fools going to shoot? The kid's about to piss himself.
Hassan tore away from us.
Gents, who really wants to see this rebel brat get shot at? He's too short by half, anyway.
Hassan snatched the bottle off the kid's head.
Scram!
The kid stared at him like he was the hangman who'd just cut the noose.
Go, I urged silently.
Then he was stumbling away. The pressure on my chest eased even as a murmur of discontent rose. Hassan silenced them with a raised hand.
Wouldn't you rather see these three men with a score to settle take aim at each other?
The uproar from the stands was deafening, feet stamping so hard the whole building shook down to the nails.
Step up, bandit.
I took one long, shuddering breath. Maybe I ought to have thought this through, or at least held firmer at 1,000.
Come on, kid,
a voice by my ear said.
You trust me, don't you?
I eyed the foreigner's cocksure grin. I don't even know you. He reached out and pulled my hat off my head. I was glad I'd thought to shove my hair back under the shima that was pulled low as my eyebrows, but still I felt bare without the hat.
All the more reason to trust me.
The walk across the barn seemed too long. Hassan grinned as he balanced the bottle on top of my head.
Better earn your money and not shake, kid, or everyone will see the bottle trembling like a girl on her wedding night.
My anger rooted me. The bottle didn't move. Not when the foreigner stepped to the line. Not when he slotted his single bullet into the chamber. Not even when he raised the gun and pointed it straight at my head. Except I couldn't breathe. He took careful aim, adjusting the shot. He was taking his time, and my nerves were fraying by the second.
Just fire, you coward!
The shout burst from my lips the same second the gun went off. I didn't have time to flinch. A boo went up from the crowd, and I was still alive to hear it. I tipped my head and the bottle tumbled unbroken into my hands. I looked, and a bullet was embedded in the wall, a hair to the left of my skull. Only then did I start to shake. I wasn't sure if it was from nerves or from excitement. I wrapped my hands around the bottle to hide it either way. In a blur of booze, I walked back to the line. The foreigner passed me halfway across the pit as he walked out to the target. He paused for a second, placing my hat back on my head.
You all right?
He asked.
Cut it a little fine there.
I tugged my hat back down.
What's the matter, bandit?
Like he thought something was too damn funny.
Feeling a little less immortal?
I shoved the bottle at him. I wouldn't taunt someone who's about to aim a gun at your head. He laughed and kept walking. And then I was the one standing behind the white-painted line, and he was the target. I could hit the bottle no problem if I wanted to. What were the chances Damad would actually hit the foreigner anywhere fatal? And even if he did, what was the foreigner to me? Not 1,000 fuza in prize money. I fired. The bottle stayed in one piece.
The game is over,
Hassan cried over the shouts.
Damad reclaims his spot as your champion.
Some cheered, likely those holding slips with his number on them. And slowly a new chant started to go up from the crowd.
Shoot! Shoot! Shoot!
The champion was waving unsteadily.
Yeah, I want a shot at the snake, too.
The foreigner had pulled the bottle off his head, but now the champion was swaggering over to the line, taking aim and gesturing at him to step back into place.
They're right, Hassan crowed. We can't have a winner if Damad doesn't shoot.
He cut his gaze toward me. I understood what he meant clear enough. No winner meant no winnings for the house, and that meant no money for us.
What do you say, Eastern Snake?
My eyes met the foreigner's, and I shook my head. He held my stare for a long moment, all hints of joking gone. Then he stepped back and set the bottle on his head. The champion stumbled up to the line. He could barely stand. He squinted at the foreigner, as if trying to make out where he was exactly. My father had been this drunk most days when he came home from factory work. He got his hands on a gun one of those times. My mother and I would have both been dead if he'd been able to shoot straight. Damad raised the gun. From where I was standing, I could see he was aiming straight at the foreigner's chest. The foreigner had beaten the champion last time. Damad was drunk enough to think revenge was a better idea than winning, and a man was a big enough target for even a drunk to hit. As the champion's hand squeezed down on the trigger, Hassan's earlier words crashed down around me. There were no second shots in this game. I flung my body sideways without thinking and crashed into Damad. The shove sent the bullet 3 feet to the left. The liquor sent Damad down into the sand while I staggered to find my footing, clutching my arm. The crowd went up like a powder keg that had been waiting for the right spark. They knew they'd been tricked, but no one seemed to know how. Some were screaming that the foreigner and I were in it together. Others were shouting that Hassan had scammed them. In an instant, they were rushing the bet wranglers.
Son of a whore.
A pair of hands grabbed me by the front of the shirt. Damad was back on his feet, and he had me clear off the ground, my toes dragging in the sand. I started to thrash, but he shoved me back against the wall of the pistol pit, knocking the air out of my lungs. And then there was a knife in his hand. Damad's face was close to mine, his teeth bared, his breath reeking of spirits hot against my cheek.
I'm going to gut you from navel to nose and leave you here picking your insides up off the ground, boy.
The foreigner's hand clamped over the champion's wrist, moving too fast for me to see, but I heard the sickening snap. I dropped to the sand in a heap as the champion fell onto his side, roaring in pain, the knife clattering away. I saw bones sticking out of his arm. The foreigner swiped the knife from the ground.
Run,
he ordered. The whole place had gone to hell. A drunk smashed into a lantern as he careened. It dropped into the sands, shattering in oil and flames. I turned to make for the entrance, but the brawl was too far gone already. There was no escape that way. The foreigner and I stood, backs against the wall. We were forgotten. The chaos wasn't even about us anymore. The whole barn was filling with smoke. We were going to be choking in seconds.
I don't suppose you can fly,
he shouted over the noise, pointing his chin straight above us. A window just out of reach, above the stands. I grinned at him, even though he couldn't see it.
I can't fly, but I don't weigh so much.
He understood me perfectly. Linking his fingers together, he created a foothold. I shoved the pistol I was still carrying into my belt. Damned if I'd leave a decent weapon here. I took a few short steps back and ran. My third step landed my right boot in the foreigner's interlaced fingers, and he launched me upward. My arms banged into the ledge with a jolt that was going to leave bruises. His hands were there under me, holding me steady as I dragged myself up the windowsill. The prayer house's roof was an easy drop below, and in a few seconds I was out in the night air. I was dying to make a run for it. Instead, I turned back, bracing my feet against the roof as I pulled him up, until he was out of the window and on the roof beside me. We jumped down from the old prayer house, rolling as we hit the sand below. A bullet bounced off the wood near my head.
"All right, Bandit," he gasped. "Where to?"
"Where to?" he asked me, in the town with the sky smelling of smoke and fiery chaos blooming in the dark. I had to get back to my uncle's house. I had to lose him. My little cousin Nasima once got slapped silly for bringing home a mouse she'd found under the schoolhouse. I could only guess what had happened to me if I brought a stray foreigner anywhere near home. And that wasn't even banking on what the foreigner would do if he found out I was a girl.
"Nah, I'll be all right."
He looked over his shoulder.
"Got somewhere to be?"
I was already backing away, eyeing the bar where I'd left Blue, hoping to God the horse was still there.
"Thanks for everything."
I forced a grin at him, even though he couldn't see it.
"But I've got to go see a bar about a horse."
And before he could say another word, I bolted.
Chapter 3. "Get your useless self up into the store, or don't expect to eat today."
My blanket came off me with a violent rip. I groaned, squeezing my eyes shut against the sunlight and my aunt's face.
"And don't expect to eat tomorrow, either."
I counted her footsteps as she stomped away. 10 steps, and she was clear to the kitchen. I cracked an eyelid. How much sleep had I had? A few hours, maybe. I wanted sleep more than I did food. But burnt dawn light was leaking in, and calls to prayer were starting. I rolled from the mat to the wooden floor, pulling my blanket over my head as I dug around for some clothes. Around me, the 6 cousins I shared the cramped room with were stirring. Little Nasima sat bolt upright before flopping back down and stuffing the corner of her blanket into her mouth. You could barely see the floorboards between our mats. Our room looked like a battlefield, clothes strewn everywhere like fallen bodies, schoolwork, mending needles, and the odd book scattered throughout like shrapnel. Only Olia's corner had a clear floor. She even tried to hang a horse blanket from the ceiling to separate herself from her sisters. It took some getting used to, this room. There had been only 2 rooms in my father's house, the one he and my mother slept in, and the big room where we ate and where I slept for almost 16 years. That room was gone now, with the rest of the house I grew up in. It took some searching, but I found my good blue calotte shoved in a ball under my mat. It was wrinkled, so I did my best to smooth out the creases with my hands before tugging it quickly on over the plain brown shalwar I wore on the bottom. Shira sighed into her pillow.
"Can you stop crashing around like a dying goat? Some of us are trying to sleep."
In her corner, Olia pulled her blanket back over her head. I found a boot and dropped it from as high as I could so it hit the floor with a loud thud. Shira flinched. She was the only one of my female cousins I shared blood with. The others belonged to my uncle's other wives. Aunt Farah had given her husband 3 boys, then Shira. She simpered at me through heavy-lidded eyes.
"You look terrible, cousin. Didn't sleep well?"
My fingers faltered on the sash I was knotting around my waist. Shira smirked pointedly.
"Looks like you must have been tossing and turning, too."
I resisted the impulse to tug my sleeve down over my bruised elbow. Of course Shira knew I'd snuck out. She slept 2 feet away. Not that she could have guessed where I'd gone.